This is Weekend Edition from NPR News. I'm Scott Simon. Today, thousands of NATO and Afghan soldiers began a massive offensive against the Taliban in the Helmand province. We'll hear more about the offensive from NPR's Sarah Asrahardi-Nelson, who was with U.S. Marines in action there. But first, joined by NPR senior news analyst Dan Shore. Good morning, Dan.
Good morning, Scott.
And assess for us the importance of this offensive in the overall war.
Well, it looks like a make-or-break affair. It's interesting that a great deal of emphasis is being put on the fact that this is one that was worked out with NATO as well as with the Afghan government. That President Karzai is being mentioned as one who said, go ahead. And so everybody's in this together, and if it works, then it's going to be great. But if it doesn't work, trouble.
Much of the news of the week was dominated by an enormous historic blizzard that affected the lives of tens of millions of Americans. Mm-hmm. The U.S. government, which sometimes implicitly says to other countries around the world, you know, don't mess with the U.S. government, had to shut down for several days because of a snowstorm.
Yeah, I thought it was very interesting. I thought it was also interesting that went along with that was the fact that a lot of the civil servants who stayed at home were able to call via internet and plug in and find out what was going on. I begin to wonder whether we're approaching a digital revolution in the course of which, after a while, even without snowfall, you can be told, stay home, you can do this from home someday.
Well, let's be able to examine this for a moment. Might this be a snowshed, if not a watershed of some kind, in alerting millions of Americans to the fact that maybe they don't have to get into their cars and travel to a job?
I think that's right. I think we are really approaching a stage in our evolution where having to pop off into your car every time you have to go somewhere may be changed now. I mean, it began to change when they were able to have teleconferences, people sitting at different places and looking at television cameras and having their meeting. Now the next step seems to be that they can go home and do a lot of the work from home, which we know they can do. But I think now telework is becoming a concept.
Former Alaska Governor Sarah Palin made a personal appearance in Nashville where she gave the keynote speech at the Tea Party convention last weekend. What's your assessment of how she enhanced her political prospects by allying herself with this movement?
Well, nobody knows exactly where she's headed. She says it would be absurd to say that she's not going to be running for president, which is not the same as saying that she is running for president. That speech that she made at the Tea Party convention went very well with the people at the convention, but then there was a post-ABC poll that indicated that she wasn't getting a great deal of support around the country. It says something like 55% of Americans have an unfavorable view of Mrs. Palin, and so I don't think that she has enhanced her position very much since she ran for vice president.
Of course, let's turn to international news now. And in Iran this week, President Ahmadinejad said of Iran, quote, we are a nuclear state. What's the import of this announcement?
Well, the import of this is that he wants to really divert attention from a lot of things that are happening in Iran. They had the anniversary of the Iranian Revolution, and there were demonstrations, and they cracked down on demonstrations. But clearly for Ahmadinejad, his tactic is to say, look, we are a great country, hoping to draw attention away from the fact that he simply is not very popular in his own country.
Now, there are people from ranging from at least the French foreign minister to White House spokesman Robert Gibbs and a number of people who really are knowledgeable about nuclear matters who cast some doubt on this boast.
Well, what they cast out, what he said was that Iran could now enrich uranium up to 20% or more. There is a tendency on the part of the U.S. and France and others to doubt that they can do it. But whoever knows?
In a few appearances this week, President Obama left no doubt that he certainly did not want Iran to develop a nuclear weapon and that it was U.S. policy to deter them from doing that. At the same time, the more Iran insists on declaring that they're on the verge of developing such a weapon, does that throw other considerations into place?
It looks still as though when the president talks, he talks about diplomatic sanctions, about economic sanctions, carefully avoids the use of force in this thing. They're approaching a point where if it really is true that they have the makings of a nuclear weapon, that the United States is not going to be able to sit by and say, let's have sanctions, especially when China will veto any sanctions in the Security Council.
Well, and that introduces this. Next week, President Obama is scheduled to meet in person with the Dalai Lama. He had the opportunity to do so last year and did not, and that was certainly read as a desire on President Obama's part to not upset relations with the Chinese at that point, Iran being a major consideration. What kind of signal does a meeting with the Dalai Lama now send?
Well, the president was generally expected to see the Dalai Lama last October, but then didn't. And then got some flack from Americans about that as to how about human rights if you were not going to meet with them. And so they decided, yeah, maybe we better schedule a meeting. And now they're scheduled a meeting next week sometime. All right. That's the way they play it. The Chinese government announces that this is terrible, this is going to harm relations and so on. And I suspect that this, along with Taipei, is simply something which goes back and forth. You do it, we denounce you for it, and life goes on.
NPR Senior News Analyst Dan Shore, thanks so much.
My pleasure.